Chapter 18. The buzzer rang twice, but Kelsey ignored it, pulling the duvet tight around her. Her pillows were stained with mascara and her cheeks puffy from crying. Abandoned textbooks littered her bed, failed attempts at distraction. The buzzer rang continuously this time, forcing Kelsey to react. She stormed over to the intercom.
What? It's Michael. Can we talk?
Go to hell,
she snapped, slamming the receiver down. Buzz.
What part of go to hell don't you get? I made a mistake, and I'm so sorry. Please, let me explain,
begged Michael.
I'll tell you what you can do. Collect your crap and get the hell out of my life.
She buzzed him in and waited. Michael scaled the steps three at a time, arriving in a flash.
Please, hear me out. You're the most amazing person I've ever met, and that's part of why I acted so crazy.
Kelsey folded her arms, unimpressed.
You're a time waster and a mess. What was I thinking, dating a guy who thinks he's cursed?
Thought he was cursed,
corrected Michael with a nervous smile. Kelsey did not smile.
Please, can I come in and explain? If you don't like what I have to say, I'll leave right away.
Kelsey glared at him, then took a seat in her armchair, sighing with relief. Michael aimed for the sofa, but Kelsey's arched eyebrow checked his presumption. Instead, he hovered, like he was delivering a pitch.
Okay, here goes. The day I met you, I made a dreadful mistake. I switched my letter at the ministry, and it's haunted me ever since. First, they came for me, then they made my granddad ill. I tried atoning, but they threw me out. That's when you found me in the square, appearing as this amazing, captivating soul, unshackled by the tripwires of my mind. You were inspiring, ambitious, and beautiful, and you transformed my outlook. Because of you, I felt free for the first time in months. Plus, you saved my granddad from drowning, which was super badass. Our library sessions since then have been the best weeks of my life. This morning, I realized how deeply I care about you, and I freaked out. I realized this amazing new person in my life could be taken away from me, and it drove me to make the same crazy mistakes as my father did before his death. I don't want to be like him. I want to be here, in the moment, with you.
Michael stared earnestly, still catching his breath. Kelsey's expression remained as hard as a rock.
You don't have a dad?
Not anymore, but as I told the kids at school, what I lack in the dad department I make up for with a doubly awesome mom.
How'd that work out for you?
Yeah, they bullied me pretty bad, so I stopped saying it.
Kelsey snorted.
Been there. Fine, you get one more shot.
You still have to make it up to me, though.
The phone rang and Kelsey picked up.
Tony? How did you get this number? What are you... For real? Fine, I'm coming over.
She hung up and fixed Michael with a trying stare.
How about that? It's your chance to make amends. We're about to visit my old life.
Michael tightly gripped his backpack as he followed Kelsey to her old street. The locals were leaning out on their porches, smoking, drinking, and arguing. There were no flower beds or manicured hedgerows. The trees had carvings and bouts of graffiti on them, and dog mess punctuated the sidewalk. It was a far cry from any neighborhood he'd visited. Kelsey knocked on the grimy door, and Tony answered in a flash. He looked like a new man. Still an odd man, but a newer version of himself. He'd tamed his unruly hair into a slick ponytail. It accentuated the bald patches on either side of his forehead, but gave his chin some unexpected definition. He was wearing a set of suit pants, a shirt, and a tie, all of which were too big for his skinny frame, but an upgrade on his previous wardrobe. Tony looked flustered and relieved to see her.
Thank you for coming. You're a hero. An angel. Who's this guy?
This is Michael.
Sup? I'm Tony. I raised her,
said the man, beating his chest.
No, you didn't. How long's this gonna be?
Said Kelsey, pushing past him.
3 hours, maybe. The place is across town, and I gotta do some kind of test. The kids are in bed, asleep. Wish me luck.
He hurried down the path, giving them a grateful wave.
Welcome to the spa, said Kelsey.
Michael followed her into the gloomy household, breathing through his mouth. They peeled into the kids' room. The twins were asleep in their adjacent cots, tucked in under thrift shop blankets.
Are they your siblings?
Whispered Michael.
Not in the conventional sense. If foster kids count as siblings, then I guess I've got around 30,
shrugged Kelsey. You were fostered?
9 times in 14 years, plus some luxury stays in the ministry's child care patronage center.
What's that?
The orphanage. They give it a fancy name so the kids there don't feel stigmatized. Instead, we feel really, really normal, said Kelsey, tilting her head and gnashing her teeth. They both chuckled. Did you ever know your biological parents? He asked tentatively.
Only vaguely. I was 4 when I got put into care.
What happened to them? If you don't mind me asking.
They're meth heads.
Social services intervened when I never enrolled at preschool. I got moved to this city and I've not seen them since. An infant cried, and Kelsey plucked it from the wooden cot, soothing it against her chest. Feeling left out, the other child kicked up Mary Hell.
Can you get that one? Asked Kelsey.
Michael leaned into the metal cot and lifted out the tiny infant, wincing as he copped a whiff of its diaper.
I think this one's ready for changing, he said with watering eyes.
He lay the kid back on the cot and stepped back like it was a landmine.
Down there, said Kelsey, pointing to the diaper box.
Michael fished out a fresh one and looked to the infant with dread.
How does this work?
If the kid has less poop on them at the end, that's usually a sign of success, said Kelsey. Holding his breath, Michael did the deed and hushed the kid back to sleep. Kelsey's baby was not so easily placated. Cooing, bouncing, rocking, nothing seemed to work.
I think it's hungry, she said over the kid's cries.
Michael followed her directions to the kitchen and heated up some bottled milk on the stove, testing its temperature with his pinky.
Feels about right. I always thought that home ed class was a joke, but who knew it'd come in handy?
I don't recall that class. Guess I was in isolation or suspended again, snorted Kelsey. Michael looked at his diligent study mate with surprise.
I'm a good student. Just a terrible pupil, she explained.
They moved to the sofa while the infant drank. Michael could feel individual springs through the stained fabric. The child slurped, burped, and vomited its way through until the bottle was empty.
Are you ready to sleep again?
Said Kelsey in an infant voice. The kid cooed back merrily, smiling at her.
Apparently not, she laughed.
What now? Asked Michael, perplexed.
Pass me that manual, said Kelsey.
Michael picked up a scuffed pamphlet from the counter. It bore a ministry emblem and 5 babies of various ethnicities. The first year, a parental guide. He handed it to Kelsey, who propped it open with one hand and skimmed the index.
Here we go. Chapter 4, Attunement.
She read out the instructions and shared the diagrams with Michael, who gazed in bewilderment.
I've always wondered why my work runs neonatal workshops when we already give parents these manuals. But now I get it. This thing is like a book of riddles. Thank God I've seen this one being taught.
Bring that box over, would you? Said Kelsey. Michael retrieved the box from the counter. It bore the same Ministry of Fertility logo as the pamphlet.
Look for 2 small discs and a coil, instructed Kelsey.
Michael assembled the items as per the diagram. He placed 1 electrode on either side of the baby's temples, then magnetically clipped the wires between them, arcing over its hairline. An alligator clip linked the wire to a small copper box.
You need to add the crank, then turn it to generate the magnetic field, said Kelsey.
The box was stiff, cramping Michael's hand within minutes.
Do you want to swap?
No, I'm good, said Michael, wincing.
He switched to his other hand and continued charging the device. An indicator panel turned from black to cloudy green.
I think it's ready, panted Michael. Okay, you hold the baby and I'll show you how it's done, said Kelsey.
Kelsey passed the baby across, taking care not to ping the cables off in the maneuver. She pressed a button on the crank and pulled the arm out so it was perpendicular to the box. As it clicked into place, golden streaks shot across the green portal. The baby's eyes widened. Leaning in close, Kelsey chatted to the child while tracing her hands along the length of its limbs. She then manipulated each limb, extending and retracting them in distinct combinations, applying pressure to key joints. The bronze box shut down with a gentle buzz.
Is it broken? Said Michael.
No, that just means the session's over. Developmental stimulation is carefully metered. Some parents used to be overzealous and their kids turned out like spaghetti.
So the ministry put capacitors on the boxes. It won't let us charge it until tomorrow now, said Kelsey.
What about the other kid? Asked Michael.
Good point. The ministry issues a kit for each child. Check the crate?
Aha!
Cheered Michael. He wound the crank while Kelsey played with the dosed baby.
How often are parents supposed to do this stuff? Said Michael. 18 weekly exercises, 52 weeks a year. I'm going to say a lot.
Do people really do all of them?
Some do.
And if they don't, their kids will take longer to catch up.
Some never will.
Wiped out and starving, Michael lingered in the shabby front yard while Kelsey did a handover. Tony was mouthing off at his job rejection. Kelsey was livid because he'd stopped at a bar on his way back, landing them with the twins for an extra 4 hours.
"Sober up and start being a father," she hissed.
"Don't you take that tone with me. I gave you a home."
"You gave me nothing. You think a mattress on the floor is giving someone a childhood?"
"At least you had a mattress. It's more than I got growing up," he slurred.
"Oh, okay. So as long as your life was worse than mine, you're beyond reproach."
"You think you're some big shot now just because you got fancy clothes and a big job? Think you're better than us with your words," slurred Tony.
"I know I'm better than you because I don't give up and get drunk at every hurdle."
"Hey, guys, shall we just cool it a moment?" suggested Michael.
"Screw off, kid," spat Tony.
"Show some grace. He just spent his entire Saturday looking after your kids," snapped Kelsey.
"It's fine, honestly," soothed Michael. "We're all just tired. Tony, bad luck on the job. For what it's worth, you looked pro in that outfit, so hang in there. It might just be a case of refining your interview technique."
"The hell's an interview technique?" scowled Tony.
"It's how people get jobs these days. We got sessions at school. There are adult drop-ins in the library, though, and they're child-friendly."
"I'm not dragging my sorry ass across town again just to have some minister type laugh at me," said Tony.
"People are already laughing at you. Sober up, get a job, and you can change that," snapped Kelsey. "We're out of here."
Draining the milkshake, Michael leaned back with a satisfied sigh. 3 courses of greasy diner food later and the young lovers were glowing.
"We would make great parents," mused Michael.
"Are you kidding me?" laughed Kelsey.
"Why not? We crushed it today."
"You're aware it's still Saturday, right? Same day where you woke up, acted crazy, basically dumped me, and then begged me to take you back?"
"Yeah. And now we're ready to have kids," chuckled Michael.
"You're the worst," said Kelsey, grinning into her shake.
"I'm kind of serious, though. Today made me realize I want to be a father someday, and I want to raise those kids with someone I love."
Kelsey stared at him, open-mouthed.
"Are you for real?"
"Completely. I love you dearly."
"Oh my God, I knew you were a virgin," she groaned.
"That's got nothing to do with it," blushed Michael.
"I'm pretty sure it's influencing your decisions right now."
"No more than normal. You're not my first girlfriend, Kelsey, but you're the first person I've ever loved."
"Ugh. Gross and lame. Ugh, ugh, ugh. Have the rest of my shake and shut up already."
"If I tell you I'd gladly marry you, can I have the rest of your fries, too?" he grinned.
"Unbelievable," laughed Kelsey, sliding them over. "Though I'm not marrying you. You'll be dead by 30 if you keep eating like this."
Michael chuckled, tucking into his second shake. When it came time to pay the bill, he insisted on paying as contrition for their fraught morning. Kelsey, however, was insistent she pay because the childcare took so much longer than expected. They halved it, then strolled back together arm in arm.
"If you want to come back to my place tonight, I'd be fine with that," said Kelsey, pretending to roll her eyes.
"I had plans, but I guess I could move them around," joked Michael.
With a kiss, they headed for the tram.
"Rise and shine, mister,"
said Kelsey, giving Michael a prod. He groaned and blinked one eye open. Sunlight was pouring in through the window, giving her an aura of splendor.
"I've not checked the mail yet, so feel free to run downstairs and confirm that neither of us will croak today," said Kelsey.
"Nah, I'm good," said Michael, stretching.
He sat up and rubbed his eyes, then thought about what he'd just said. To his astonishment, he really was fine with it.
"Just as well. That was a test. Congratulations, your reward is making us both breakfast while I wash my hair. I've made you coffee to sweeten the deal," she said.
Planting a kiss on his cheek, she hopped into the shower. Michael yawned his way through chopping a bunch of vegetables, then fried them up with some fake bacon. He set the table, poured some orange juice, and tuned into a smooth jazz station. When Kelsey returned, she was pleased with the effort, if not the music. After a romantic morning, they went shopping to get Kelsey more smart clothes for work. Michael was useless for fashion advice, but he relished trying on flamboyant outfits to make her laugh, until the attendant kicked him out. With a tender kiss, Kelsey called time at the bar on their date mid-afternoon.
"It's called life admin. I have to do it or my whole routine falls apart," she explained. "My mentor taught me the concept. I'd love you to meet her someday. See you at the library tomorrow."
Michael strutted home like he was walking on clouds attached to springboards. Short of wearing a t-shirt saying, "I got laid," he was doing a stellar job of advertising his recent shift in fortunes. Not that he knew it. He was too absorbed in dreams of Kelsey to show any self-awareness. The bubble of joy around Michael popped abruptly as he reached his house. His sister was sitting on the doorstep, sobbing.
"Sis, what's up?"
said Michael, hurrying closer.
"Granddad's gone," she croaked.
"Gone? What do you mean?"
"His letter came this morning. He tried waiting for you, but you never came. His mind was failing. By the afternoon, he was so confused, he couldn't even hold the envelope. Mom took him just now."
Michael raced for the tram. His mind tumbled as he counted each agonizing stop down to the ministry. As he ran to the marble square, a solitary figure greeted him, his mother descending the steps alone. Seeing her son, she broke into a watery smile, opening her arms to embrace him. Michael stepped back, appalled.
"How could you?" "Michael, I know you're upset. I am too. But he's at peace now. It's for the best."
"You took him there. You didn't even try," he protested.
"He had an appointment, Michael. You can't miss your appointment. Have you learned nothing from your father?" she said tearfully. "I wanted more time," said Michael. "I needed to see him, to tell him." "You had plenty of time, but you chose to spend it elsewhere. That's on you," she said, glaring.
With tears streaming down his face, Michael turned and ran until he could hear nothing but the sound of his own thumping heart and the wind in his ears.